After 17 seasons, is it any surprise that HGTV now features a thruple?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, this is Michael Brown. We won't be taking calls today, and if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, you'll see that we are audio only. But we've got a lot of content to cover. We want to talk about the slippery slope in America. We want to talk about how people are often more ready to believe a lie rather than believe the truth. So sit back, take in today's broadcast. I believe you'll find it eye-opening and hopefully impacting for the glory of the Lord. Okay, so HGTV has a show, and you've got a married couple, they've got two kids, but now they've added in another gal. So it's mom, dad, and another one, and they are now a thruple. And People Magazine reported February 13th, with 17 seasons under its belt, House Hunters has made HGTV history on Wednesday when it featured its first thruple, three people in a polyamorous romantic relationship, on one of its episodes. It was titled Three's Not a Crowd in Colorado Springs. And it featured one line in which one of the two women named Lori commented, "This is a couple's kitchen, not a thruple's kitchen." Now, as I was typing out an article about this, every time I typed thruple, my spell checker highlighted it. In other words, underlined it in red to say there's no such word spelled like that. Give it a little time. Soon enough, thruple will be a fully accepted word across all of the spelling platforms. In other words, polyamory is now as American as apple pie. Now here's the deal. This is what I want you to hear, friends. We, when I say we, I mean social conservatives, I mean Bible believers, I mean others who have this moral conscience. We've been saying this was coming for years. In fact, as I review things, to be honest, the only surprise is that it took this long. It took this long to be more normalized. It took this long to be more mainstreamed. Here you've got a couple with children. They meet this other gal. They, quote, fall in love with her in the bar. Now they add her into the equation. They have a commitment ceremony in the presence of the children. And now HGTV is just, hey, normalizing this. So I want to point something out. Let's go back to my 2011 book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. All right. And I have a section, one of the chapters, Queer Semantics. I have a section from polygamy to polyamory to intergenerational intimacy. Now, I should point out that Utah, the state of Utah, is now talking about removing restrictions against polygamy. But why not? If marriage could be so radically redefined so that you take out the opposite sex. I mean, think of this, friends. It's like saying a duet can have one singer or three singers. Or twins could be one baby or three babies. You're fundamentally changing the meaning of the word, the concept. Marriage, without including a member of the opposite sex, has never been marriage. But now it's been so radically redefined. Well, why not just go a little further? Why not? I mean, if marriage is not the unique union of two people, one man and one woman, if it is not that unique union joining the two sexes together, and as the norm with the biological possibility of reproduction to join a child to a mother and a father, then why can't marriage be three people or six people or one person? And in all my interaction with LGBT activists and allies, with the debate I did with Professor Eric Small, with social media interaction, with other interaction, I've never yet had one person, an LGBT activist or ally, ever had one person ever tell me why, if marriage is not the union of one man and one woman, it must have two people. Why two? What's magic about the number two? So here's what I wrote in 2011. The word polygamy, filled with negative connotations in our culture, is now being replaced by polyamory, defined as, quote, the practice of having more than one loving relationship at the same time. with the full knowledge and consent of all partners involved. The relationships are long-term, intimate, and usually, but not necessarily, sexual. Persons who consider themselves emotionally suited to such relationships may define themselves as polyamorous, often abbreviated to poly. Then I wrote, until recently, polyamory had a different name, adultery, but not anymore. Just get all the parties involved to agree to the new relationships, really, now that jealousy stuff is so outmoded, and be poly, which rhymes with jolly, instead. Here's from my book, Queerthing Happened to America, came out in 2011. Not surprisingly, polyamory groups sometimes march in gay pride events, part and parcel of the sexual liberation vanguard. In fact, in 2004, polyamory advocate Jasmine Walston stated, "We're where the gay rights movement was 30 years ago." So she said this in 2004. She was wrong. 20 years ago. 10 years ago. In other words, she... Well, hang on. Now, let me analyze this. 2004, she's saying, we are where they were 30 years ago. Okay, we are where they were back, say, in 1974. That's pretty accurate then. But the thing has intensified and sped up so much that it didn't take 30 years for them to catch up. I note this in A Queer Thing Happened to America. 5 years later, in 2009, so we're talking about 11 years ago, friends, Newsweek featured an article by Jessica Bennett entitled Polyamory, the Next Sexual Revolution, with this bold, provocative beginning. Only you and you and you. Polyamory, relationships with multiple mutually consenting partners, has a coming out party. This is what the article said. Newsweek, 2009. It's enough to make any monogamous head spin, but the traditionalists had better get used to it. Researchers are just beginning to study the phenomenon, but the few who do estimate that openly polyamorous families in the United States number more than 500,000, with thriving contingents in nearly every major city. Then I wrote, so this is not group sex or adultery or even polygamy. It is polyamory. And Newsweek warns that traditionalists had better get used to it. There's even an argument now that polyamory should be classified as a sexual orientation for the purposes of protection against discrimination. Some polyamorous actually claim they were, quote, born that way. So here, friends, so I'm reading what I wrote years ago to say we, others, many have been saying this is coming for years. Professor Robert George tweeted this out, respected law professor and strong moral conservative. He said this: the normalization of polyamory rolls down the track just as I and others predicted it would. It was, as I said, less a slippery slope than a simple unfolding of the logic of social liberalism. But of course, why not? And look, if marriage is not the unique union of one man and one woman, you know, just like you have plugs, you have the male and the female plug. The only reason you need those two aspects is because what they bring together in their uniqueness. Otherwise, you could have 10,000 plugs, a million plugs, one plug. They don't have that function unless the two make a certain connection. I'm not just talking about sexual. I'm talking about everything that brings a man and a woman together in a unique union and makes them uniquely one, friends. So please hear me. If marriage does not have to include a member of the opposite sex, if you're going to so fundamentally redefine it, it's like 2 + 2 = 4 is not math, it's spelling. And cat is spelled C-A-T, is not spelling, but that's math. If you're going to so fundamentally redefine terms, that marriage can mean anything. So sologamy, what's that? People who marry themselves. You can go to the self-marriage ceremony's website, which states self-marriage is a profound rite of passage into wholeness, trust, self-responsibility, self-liberation, and love sourced from within. It is a ritual of transformation, of proclaiming what is true in your heart and being celebrated as you make it known that you are ready to live your full potential. It is the commitment to radically honor and express your gifts and the precious gift of your life. It is the freedom to live authentically in alignment with your deepest values. It is a dedication to love no matter what. So you marry yourself. When I did a search for this just before doing the broadcast, I saw questions come up like this. What states allow self-marriage? What? What states allow self-marriage? This was the answer. Other states that allow some form of self-uniting marriage are Wisconsin, Colorado, the District of Columbia, California, Maine, and Nevada as of July 31st, 2017. So why the surprise that there's a throuple on HGTV? Why the surprise that this is mainstream, that this is the norm, as I said, as American as apple pie? Now, here's what's inevitable. An avalanche goes downhill, not uphill. The slippery slope goes downward, not upward, barring a radical course correction, which will only come from revival in the church leading to awakening in the society. Barring that, the collapse continues. Barring that, the slope continues to go downward. The avalanche continues to go downward. Now, here's what's also inevitable. The pattern repeats itself. We warn, this is coming, this is next, we're going to have thruples and whatever other numbers you want. We're mocked, you're crazy, that will never happen, you're dreaming it up, you're a doomsday prediction. That's what we're going to hear, day and night, you're crazy. And then it happens. And you know what we're told by the very same people who mocked us? You know what we're told? You're just prudes. What's the big deal? Who cares? I gave a presentation at a university campus a few years ago, local university in Charlotte, North Carolina. And the goal was to encourage and strengthen Christians, but to reach out to non-believers. It was a secular university. So they asked me to do a talk on God and sex. And one of the points that I made was when you do things God's way, it brings life and wholeness. When you do things the way of the flesh in the world, it ends up bringing death and destruction. And I illustrated these things statistically. And as I was speaking, I was referencing the slippery slope. And there were some of the students there. They didn't interrupt me. I commended them for it. But they were making all kinds of faces, expressing their extreme disagreement. When it came time for Q&A, they wanted to argue strongly that there is no such thing as a slippery slope, that I was dreaming it up and making it up. I then asked them, well, should someone, let's say three people want to marry, should they have the right to? They thought about it. Well, yeah, they should. I said, well, what about like two brothers, 20 years old, adult brothers? Should they have the right to quote marriage? Well, yeah, they should. Basically, they said the government should sanction every possible relationship, loving relationship, whatever, as long as it's consensual. So I said, so you just proved my point. You just accepted fully the slippery slope. First, you denied it existed, and now you sanction every aspect of it. Friends, don't be surprised this is happening, but pray all the more. For awakening, for stirring, for transformation. It must begin with us, and it must begin today. Otherwise, who knows what's coming?
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Again, we're audio only, no phone calls today either, so enjoy the show. You just have to picture my smiling face. As we're talking about slippery slope, as we're talking about awakening, as we're talking about turning the tide, I want to present a couple things to you, and then we're going to shift gears and talk about some other important issues facing us today. But everything reproduces after its own kind. And when you go in a certain direction, it's going to confirm you going in that direction. You know, it's like an addiction or a wrong decision. You start on a certain path, and then you take steps along that path, and then it reinforces that path, and it gets deeper and stronger and deeper and stronger and harder, harder than to get out, harder than to get yourself unentrenched. And it becomes very, very challenging in that regard. Look, I'll give you a simple example. You eat certain foods. You become addicted to those foods. The foods are unhealthy. You get heavier eating those foods. As the years go by, your metabolism slows down. You get even heavier. You become more dependent on the foods. It becomes harder and harder because you're going in a certain direction. In the same way, when you're disciplined in a certain area, when you do the right thing, when you say no to sin, it makes it easier to say no to sin the next time. And the next time, you get stronger and stronger. All right, so there are spiritual rules. You reap what you sow. Another, as I mentioned, everything reproduces after its own kind. So you have to ask yourself a question. Which direction is my life going? If I continue in this direction, which way will it end up? Now, here's what's really fascinating. God's ways reproduce in beautiful and glorious ways. If I say to you, take truth and multiply it, what do you get? More truth. Lots of truth. Abundant truth. That's all you get. Truth. Take real love. Multiply that. What do you get? More love. Beautiful love. Glorious love. Love, love, love. Let's take something negative. Let's take bitterness. Let's take greed. Let's take lust. You take any of these things, you multiply them. You multiply lust, and before long, you're doing things you never knew existed before, or you're desiring things you never knew existed before. And it gets deeper and worse and uglier and uglier. You take greed. You take covetousness. And before you know it, your life is consumed with this, and then you're doing the most extreme and crazy things to satisfy desires that never even existed in you. Same with bitterness. You start with bitterness and unforgiveness, and then over time it leads to this incredible anger, and then hatred. It could lead to violence. It could lead to murder. The negative things reproduce in a downward spiral. God's truths, God's principles reproduce in a life-giving, ever more beautiful and wonderful spiral of life. When I gave this talk at the university in Charlotte a few years ago that I just mentioned in the first segment on God and sex, again, I'm trying to speak to kids that don't know the Lord, that may not believe the Bible at all, that may not believe in the existence of God, and I presented principles to them just to get them thinking. For example, I asked them this. Okay, why is it you have a couple and they keep themselves sexually pure before they're married, so they're not sleeping around, they don't have multiple sexual partners, right? They then get married and they have a wonderful relationship. They're married 50 years and through much of their marriage they are sexually active and have a healthy sexual relationship within marriage. They'll never get a sexually transmitted disease doing that. They could be together hundreds of times, thousands of times, but within the confines of marriage, they'll never get a sexually transmitted disease. However, if they committed the exact same acts, if they had sexual intercourse with someone they weren't married to, so that the exact same act with someone they weren't married to, they might get a sexually transmitted disease. And I asked the students, where does that come from? Where does a sexually transmitted disease come from? It's an interesting question, isn't it? You know, one theory is that those who are promiscuous and sleeping with this person, this person, this person, this person, that there's more possibility of picking up diseases, there's more possibility of picking up other conditions that can then work on your immune system and weaken you and now make you more vulnerable to a sexually transmitted disease. That's one theory I've heard. Another theory is a darker theory, which says this, that human beings doing this in the confines of marriage, so one human to another human, it'll never happen. And one human to another human in normal circumstances, it'll never happen unless the disease has been introduced from somewhere on the outside. Because that's the question. Where did the disease come from? It's had to start somewhere. So there are some who believe that it started with bestiality. And that's a disease, something was now imported into the human race through this sinful act, through breaking the bonds, the bounds, the barriers of life that God has constructed to save us from death. So you go outside of those bounds, you cross that boundary, you now go into forbidden territory. As a result, you now get something in your body that never should have been there. So now you're with someone else. Now it gets transmitted. However, think of this. If you are pure before marriage, you'll never touch that. If you're just with each other within marriage, you'll never touch it. So wherever the STDs came from, they're outside of the bounds of marriage. And then I ask the question, say with same-sex practice, why is it that, say, men being with men, have that act has so many more STDs associated with it. I'm not hating on people and saying that. I'm just saying that God did not construct us for that. That's not the way that God made us, and therefore when we violate his guidelines, it's going to lead to problems. You say, well, wasn't it the same with women and women? It's not exactly the same. However, it has been demonstrated in many ways that women who are just with women can actually contract certain diseases and conditions that will not be contracted or at the same level by women who are with men. It's for whatever reasons. I don't have the time now to get into all the studies, nor am I a scientist or researcher to back up every claim, but it's simply data that I've looked at and studied over years here. Or how about this? When I was writing Saving the Sick America, I referenced some older studies that indicated that when women were surveyed in a major women's magazine years ago, that to the shock of many of the readers and probably the people doing the polls, the women who said they were the most sexually satisfied were the women who were in a happy marriage. So they were married to the same person, they weren't committing adultery, they weren't sleeping around, and these women, so with the same man for years, they spoke of the highest level of sexual satisfaction, and the ones who had the lowest level were the ones who had the most partners. So this gal's going from here to here. Hey, she's living the sexual dream. She's picking this dream guy or that guy. She's having sex with no responsibility, done with him, go to somebody else, new excitement every week if you want it. They were the least satisfied. As I was writing that, a colleague of mine was reviewing the book to give an endorsement and said, oh, these stats have been verified again in recent studies, and sent me a bunch of major studies that had been done, not just a survey from a women's magazine, but researchers, scientific researchers, and the conclusions were the same. Now, it's not to say that every married couple is happy sexually and everyone sleeping around is just miserable, but it is to say that one thing brings lasting satisfaction and another doesn't. I remember being in the world and friends of mine in the early days of having certain experiences as growing up as teens, and they couldn't wait for this or that, and they did certain things and they were dissatisfied. And then when they got saved and they got married, they said, boy, it's completely different. One thing is with love and with a lasting commitment, and it satisfies in a certain way. And the other thing, as stimulating as it may have been, as exciting to the flesh as certain things may have been, they ultimately left you dry. They ultimately left you dissatisfied. They ultimately left you feeling that something was lacking. The bond of love and the sacredness of sex was missing. There are pleasures in sin for a season. If sin didn't feel good, people wouldn't do it. I was talking to a doctor the other day, and then he was saying, look, you've got man's food and you've got God's food. And God's food, you know, the natural foods, he said, those are meant to make you healthy. Man's food is meant to taste good. And he was explaining how you take all the healthy things out of man's food, then you add the preservatives in, you add this and that and this to sweeten it, and this to add this and that, and this to make it more addictive. So it tastes good, but it's destructive to your body in the long term. And the other tastes good, but maybe not as good. Doesn't have all the sugars, all the salts, all the other additives, all the things that we get used to. May not have those, but long term, it brings beautiful lasting health. Hey, I am an eyewitness to that myself. So I want to encourage you, friends, stay with what's right. Stay with God's ways. Maybe you're a young person in college and you're following the Lord, but all your friends are sleeping around. You're not, and you're getting drunk and high, and you're thinking, man, what am